Hello, welcome back to Millennial 2019, and I'm now here with Jared and Jason from the After Party, that is The Great Order and No White Guilt. Now, both of them have been on Millennial, I think, the last 2 years running. That was how they first encountered each other, and oddly enough. And last year, Jared's was particularly, he came on at the very start before Sargon, and that was an interesting experiment, which I wanted to repeat this year, but couldn't do for logistical reasons. And we spoke about, and I'm not asking for this for any sort of vanity, I'm just curious, and it interested me at the time. We spoke about Millennial as a tradition. At that point, it was only the third year it had run. This is the fourth year it's run. Jared, is there anything else you'd like to say to that given this year? Because it does seem to be, even though I say so myself, this does seem to have been the most popular one so far, at least in terms of people's approval.
Last year was the third and not the fourth.
Well, it was 20. Oh, no, you're right. You're right. But I don't tend to count 2015 because it was completely different format. Kind of, yeah. Yes, you're right. It was the fourth one last year, and this is the fifth one.
So we can call this the fifth. So you're halfway to the 10th anniversary. I don't know what the fifth anniversary is. I don't know if it's like ribbons or something. It's not quite valuable, but first of all, hello, everyone. And it's great to be here. Yes, I do have to thank you. Welcome to Millennial with Tap. And yeah, I think I can speak for Jason when I say, I'm sure Millennial has brought together a lot of people, but anyone that knows our work or maybe is getting introduced to us, learning a little bit more about us tonight, we know each other because we became aware of one another 2 years ago via Millennial 2017. So thank you for that. And yeah, I did kick this thing off last year, didn't I? And it was a great honor. Thank you for that again. We had a lot of fun. That first one last year, the 2018, the first episode of that. And I actually wrote an article for Countercurrents shortly thereafter about what you were just saying. And I know we're going to talk about the decade tonight. So this is now the fifth. That's half of a decade. So especially in internet land, that's a long enough time. And in a nascent movement like this, the white positive movement, as Jason well knows and has been involved in longer than I have, much longer, goes back a very long time. And there are a lot of people who, some names we know, some names we don't know, who dedicated their lives to this and definitely deserve our respect and had it a lot harder in some ways before the days of the internet. But this iteration of things in this generation and all of the energy that is able to burgeon up, bubble up from the internet, is a relatively new thing. And so, yeah, 5 years into it, and you providing some kind of a signpost or some kind of flag, putting your flag down every December, something to rally around, is a bit of an institution at this point. I mean, it might sound funny to say that about something for only 5 years, but I think in the context of the movement and the online thing going on right now, I know sometimes the names change and I don't think any of us here really, that's not our primary thing, caring about what it's called. It is something. And also, it's near and dear to me because, and maybe this will come up later, maybe it won't, but in some of the things I do on my own, including big part of my year was starting to work with Red Ice. It's a wonderful opportunity. And I like to look at, not in a way of recreating the past, but more as a way of seeing expressions of the spirit of our people. And from there, getting back into what our instincts are, what we're about. Nothing static in time. No one's advocating for dressing up and trying to faithfully recreate what things were like 200 years ago or 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago. But looking at our practices and customs, there's something particular about Yule, about December and even January, because January was a part of it back in the day. We just know this time of year is different. I think we all feel it. And I wanted to use that as an opportunity to really articulate that it's right under your nose. You might not think about it this way, but the warmth you feel for this time of year, even tinged with the melancholy, because there is a certain melancholy aspect to it too. That's our own spirit as European peoples. That's reflecting back at you. It's a potent, you're feeling who we are in the blood. And so in a digital age, in an internet age, you're still enacting, even if it was subconscious, that rhythm of wanting to gather together, take stock, celebrate. All the signposts are there. So that's what I wanted to get across in that article. And I recently did a video for Red Ice about this time of year that came out a couple of weeks ago. Because we can't get so hung up on the details and the trappings and be like, well, we're not doing it the way our ancestors did it, so it's fake and it's phony. No, you have to look at the, you can't miss the forest for the trees. You have to look at the instinct behind it, the spirit behind it. And even if the modern world, the layers of the modern world over it kind of warp it and pervert it, it's still at the end of the day expressing a certain instinct, and millennial is now a part of that. So hail millennial.
Thank you very much. I thought you were going to speak for a while, so I made you full screen. I'm still experimenting with this, but so yes, thank you for those kind words. I wasn't looking for praise about millennial. I just wondered if you what your thoughts were on it. It does seem to have quickly become a tradition, and I'm very glad about that. It's nice. I like it. It's I like to have this. I like to have given something to the community, basically. Okay, no white guilt. We haven't heard from you yet, so. Hello, and I'm going to make you full screen.
Me full screen.
There we go.
It is splendid to be here with you, Woz. Splendid to be back with everyone. All of these wonderful people that I'm already seeing in the chat and saying hello to. Please, folks, we're getting started here tonight. It's going to be a fantastic time with Woz. If you can, tweet it out, gab it out, send it to your friends in your circles of influence. Let them know that we're having a party over here with Millennial Woz and that this is millennial, and they're missing out if they are not participating in this. I have to tell you, I have caught a little bit of this, a little bit of that, as Millennial has been marching forward, and a lot of fantastic guests. But so far for me, what I've seen, I haven't seen the totality of every interview, but it's been magnificent. I'll quickly say, Woz has been an ace and continues to be an ace, in part because he's real, he has real struggles, he goes up and down. Like all of us do in our emotions, how we're seeing the world, what should we do next? And you kind of take your own journey by participating in his journey. So he's a fantastic individual, content producer. Thank you for your service to White Wellbeing. Please subscribe to him and the work that he does. And please support him as well, because he needs and deserves the help that we can give him. But I have to say, starting right off here, that my favorite moment that I have seen so far in all of your interviews, I absolutely could not stop laughing. I've probably watched it 15 times. Somebody has to make a clip out of it and then maybe have some of our artists turn it into a immortal meme. But there was this moment while you were with Dutton, and you are experimenting with the full screen. Just reminded me of it when you just did it with Jared. And you went to the full screen with Ed on there, and immediately he noticed he was full screen, and it gave him a little hiccup, and then he kept talking, carrying forward. And then that gnawing sense of foreboding or whatever it might have been, just eating away at the inside. He was covering it up quite well. And then he suddenly speaks to you and asks if you're still there. And then this disembodied sort of omnipresent voice of Woz comes in, and it seems to be all around Dutton. And it says, I'm here. Don't worry. And he said, oh, no, I'm not worried, but okay, maybe I was a little worried. And it suddenly, I just thought, that was the ghost of Christmas Woz. This is Dutton is sitting there talking, and it was just like, suddenly I was transported into a scene in a theater somewhere, and Dutton is carrying on a conversation with this invisible Woz, the ghost of Christmas Woz. And this has to be immortal. Somebody has to clip that. I love it. Anyhow, it's been fantastic. So many wonderful guests, and really appreciate what you're doing here with Millennial. And thank you so much for having me back again, and this time having me with my great colleague and partner, Jared George, which, of course, we found out about each other because of you, and a lot of great things have come about as a consequence of that. But I am excited tonight to have another conversation with you and Jared and the community that is here with us. So many great names. And to talk about all of the good things that are happening now, the good things over the past year, which has just been, quite honestly, absolutely remarkable. Hockey stick kind of a graph sort of a thing. People focus. They zero in. It's like those pictures that are made of those dots. Is there a specific name for those? And you get too close to those and you can't see anything. But then when you back up, you suddenly can see, wow, there's this magnificent vista in front of you. And so it's just like those pictures of the dots, and it's easy to hone in, to focus too narrowly and see what's negative. And especially for those who haven't been around in the white positive sphere for very long. And by that, I mean, really, for the last 5 years, if you have come into this in the last 5 years, you are really a neophyte. You are really a tyro. And that's okay. We want you. We want more neophytes. We want more tyros coming in and bringing them on board. But when you have been in this endeavor for such a short span, the setbacks really seem monumental. The censorship, and I tell you, with a glad smile on my face, Mr. George and I, we deal with the censorship almost daily. And we tell you all very little about that because we just, you know, I make a promise. Dr. Patrick Slattery mentions it a lot, that I make this promise that when the anti-whites kick me off, censor me from a platform, I get back on that one and an additional one. And I keep that promise. So we have to deal with a lot of that stuff. And when you're new, this seems like it's just colossal. It is a giant moat in the eye. You know, you can't see beyond these things. They seem like Mount Everest. But when you've been in the white positive sphere for decades, as I have, you see these things for what they are. You can see the grander graph of what the trend has been over the years. And it has been steadily going uphill for us, steadily getting better for us. And particularly over this last year and the work that I'm doing and Jared George are doing and others, just tremendous growth. So we have every reason to be excited and every reason to be excited, not just about this coming year, 2020, but this decade. So a Merry Christmas to everyone, a good Yuletide to everyone, Happy New Year and Happy Decade to everyone. And I'll pass it back and we can get talking about whatever you wanted to talk about.
Jason, I thought you were going to say your favorite episode so far was Millennial, was my opening 5 minutes ago.
5 minutes ago, yeah.
How solipsistic would that have been? These guys are so self-centered. It's ridiculous. You know what my favorite moment was so far? What Jared just said a minute ago. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Oh, well, yeah, somebody should clip that. It's the Edward Dutton one. I don't know when. Yeah. Probably quite early on in it, I would imagine. Maybe a third of the way through from memory, but I might well be wrong. But I'm still trying to work out how to use this. You see, the trouble is, it's very easy to actually remove yourself from the stream instead of clicking because it's right next to the button for making you solo. So it's rather annoying. Anyway, sorry, go on, Jared.
Well, I just wanted to ask before we really get anywhere, because I feel like we're still in prologue mode. How are you doing? How are you holding up? You're towards the end of this. How's it been this year?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. So far, I feel I'm beginning to get tired now. Like it's beginning to sort of accumulate. And I think I noticed this for the first time last night. It's not like the guests were especially boring last night at all. But I noticed, I'm finding it difficult to stay focused on what people are saying. So, I mean, I think that was, so basically 30 streams seems to be my biological recommended limit. So I think next year I might limit it to 30 streams. I'm trying to learn all the time about this and come up with different ideas for how to do it. Like someone, Black Pigeon, was suggesting that we have a group one at the end. And I'm thinking, yeah, that might be a good idea, actually. Instead of a bunch of... The trouble is, though, that group Hangout, like when it's... this Google Hangouts could take 10 people. This can take 6 people. And the trouble is, of course, as you will probably know, when you've got a bunch of people in a Hangout, in a stream together, it can get such...
Well, you feel like... Yeah, you feel like you're hosting a party. And sometimes when we have those 5 or 6-person streams, if someone hasn't spoken in a while, you're checking in with them on the side chat. You're saying, do you have anything to say about this? And they're like, well, I don't quite know about this subject. Maybe so-and-so can speak a little bit more. But you feel like if someone's sitting there for 40 minutes and they haven't said much, you start to wonder and worry if you're wasting their time a little bit. But
or if they're wasting yours. I mean, there could be they're taking up a space. I had that a few times back in the day. I mean, obviously, nowadays, I would never do public Hangouts where anyone could join. That would just be suicidal. They wouldn't even be technically possible anymore because the Hangout platform is gone. But anyway, I think that was one of the lessons I learned in 2015 and, well, especially 2016, was to limit it to three or four people. Now I would even go further and say one or two people, probably the limit, but at a push, three people, like three guests, which I did with the Absolute State of Britain this year, but that was the only one. I tend to think that you've got to have discipline with streaming.
You have to have discipline with streaming, folks. That's a thing. We're authoritarians here, right? Not really. Yeah. Not really.
Well, because it's, I say that because it's so easy for it to go badly. You know, if you don't keep, I think you know what I'm, the kind of thing I'm talking about.
You get into a different headspace is the thing. And sometimes, I mean, it's a little bit like being on stage, even though you're in a comfortable environment and you're not seeing an audience in front of you necessarily. But a lot of times, I'm sure we've all experienced this, you might be speaking on a subject that you know about, you've spoken about with other people, and you're just not nailing it the way that you know you should. You're not just putting the words correctly, but it's like anything, you get used to it and you learn along the way. I mean, Jason and I have an amazing thing with TAP. I mean, we are so blessed with the people that we've spoken to and have the vast majority of them remained friends and contacts with once we speak to them. Because we started the TAP thing, as you might know, with just a really focused interview. Like, we really wanted it to be a place where people could come on and you get the behind the scenes of what makes them tick. And people like that. We've had moments on our show where we've had several times people have shared things that they are like, well, I'm going to share this and I've never shared this before. And we take that as a great point of pride that they felt comfortable with us to do that. And no one's regretted it. No one said, oh man, I wish I didn't do that, or please clip that out after the fact. Nothing of the sort. We have people tell us all the time how we've made them very comfortable. So that's what we've tried to do with what our main show TAP. And now it's flowering out into kind of other things as well, because we want to keep that format. But it's only so much you can do with it. And there's a lot of other things we want to do. You talked about having some people come in. We actually let people come in on the chat on our anniversary show last February. We're coming up on 2 years. We have a big anniversary thing this February for 2 years. But we're looking into call-ins. You know, we don't know what the best way to do that is. Obviously, you have to be very careful because you know, one wacko start saying ridiculous things and they put the stream in conflict. But we have so many people in our community that want to participate. We have a very proactive community too. It's not just the people that are on our shows. It's we have people, and this is why on our site we have a whole community page, that are making their own content. You know, remixing things from our streams, songwriting. Original musicians, there's a lot of crossover between us and White Art Collective now. So we're in a position of kind of like curating and finding talent too. And so that's a whole other thing. Really proactive community. So it's taken on a life of its own. It's become a whole thing.
Oh, well, one thing does tend to lead to another. That's something that I find time and again. And I think it's relevant to say that because a lot of people might not realize that if you just get involved, you know, one thing leads to another, basically. It's something that I didn't quite grasp that. You know, when I was a loner, basically, before I started the channel, when you've got multiple people involved, like a community involved in, when you've got a community, it's much easier for things to just take a life of their own, and you don't need to do everything, and you don't need to plan everything out, and you don't need to come up with every idea. People are sort of volunteer, and it just happens that way. It's just that things end up happening that you might not that you probably didn't foresee. I mean, for example, Millennial, I only started it because I thought lots of people were asking me to do more hangouts, and after the general election one in the May of 2015, so I waited eight months and then did something at Christmas. And the idea was that I don't want people to be lonely at Christmas, and there were lots of people on my channel who seemed to be lonely back then, because I was attracting that kind of person because I was lonely, so it was a natural thing. So I did it for that reason. And what ended up happening was, well, this. I'm, you know, 5 years later, I'm still doing it, and it's become a sort of expectation. So, and of course, people volunteer to appear. And like last year, this year was different. This year I didn't leave it open for people to apply, because I wanted it to be smaller. I think next year it will have to be the same kind of scale. I think I took on too much last year, and that's why I was so, like, the second half of it, the ones towards the end, I was just shattered. And I felt really bad about it, because I ended up not doing right by several guests, especially JF. I was just exhausted by the time I was talking to him. So I think 30 is probably the right sort of number. But
maybe you can do one a day.
One a day? Well,
one a day for the month of December.
Well, yeah, but then that wouldn't be such a sort of carnival atmosphere. That's another thing, though. I'm nervous about intruding on everyone else, because everyone else wants to, well, not everyone else, but lots of other channels want to do streams as well. So it's kind of like I dominate this period, and then people have to choose to watch Millennial or some guy who's just wanting 2 hours for his stream, you know. So that's a consideration as well. Maybe I shouldn't be so
just wait a couple more decades until you have a big white beard, then you're really gonna dominate. It'll be our Father Christmas.
Yeah. Well,
Father Christmas came, you know, the modern image came from Coca-Cola, so it's kind of a weird symmetry there.
Yes, I know, it's something I'm never quite sure about. I never quite sure how I should feel about that. So yeah, but it does seem to have gone very well. I had 2017 in my head as the best year. 2018, I think, was a bit of a misfire. I thought other people said I'm being too critical of myself, but anyway, this year seems to have gone just universally well. Everyone seems to be enjoying it, so I'm really glad by that.
Now, is this just my selfish perspective or self-centered perspective, or was there a lot of new people that kind of cropped up around 2017? Because that's when I started, and then, as I said, Jason and I got in touch in the new year of 2018, right after that. But there was like almost a class of 2017 that's now gone on and kind of become part of something new. Is that too much to say, or do you agree?
No, I think that's true. I think if you were to look at the millennial roster for that year, you'd probably see a lot of people who were new that year. And in fact, we can probably do it if I hold on a second. I can go to 2017 on this. I think this is how it works. No, it's not. Hold on a minute.
He's pulling up the WoWs database, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, Critical Condition, Coach Redpill, Brief O'Shea, Bait Alaska, Lauren Rose, No White Guilt, The Great Order, Braving Ruin, I think would have been new that year, Edgy Sphinx, Thomas Baden Reese, I think was new that year.
Mm-hmm.
Kaelin Robertson, he was new that year.
Yeah, he was on Millennial.
Yeah, oh, he was.
I forgot. Wow.
Long deleted.
For better or worse.
Yeah. Mouthy Buddha was certainly new that year. Black Pigeon Speaks, new that year. The Motley Discourse.
Black Pigeon Speaks, new that year?
Yes. He debuted in... Oh. Oh, no, hold on a minute. No, you're right. He was the previous year. He was 2016. Sorry.
I mean, it's not like necessarily the person was brand new, but the people were kind of coming to the fore at that time. There was something happening.
And definitely JF Garepi.
Yeah.
He was new that year. Who else? On the Offensive. I'm the Iconoclast. I'm pretty sure they were new that year. Westward Thought, he's disappeared. Nationalist Wrath, he's disappeared.
We see Westward Thought around a little bit, right, Jason? We've been on his show, but that was last year.
Right.
I've seen him comment, but maybe I don't know, I can't speak for him. Well, there was two of them.
So, well, anyway, quite a few. I mean, I'd say that's about probably a third or a half of the people who were on that year were probably new in 2017. So yes, your suspicion was correct. Apparently I misspelled JF's surname, so I'm not going to pronounce it again. Sorry.
Garepi.
Garepi. Apparently, I said it in a way that suggested a particular crime, which I'm not. So I'm sorry, everyone. I didn't mean to do that.
I don't think any of us are French speakers here, so hopefully we can be forgiven.
fringe speakers, but not French speakers.
Fringe, yes, fringe speakers.
Yes. Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, somebody, my previous guest or the one before him was saying that we're not actually as fringe as we think, because we actually do have an influence on the political sphere in general. But also, I remember apparently there's proof that Nigel Farage has watched The Iconoclast. I don't know what this proof is, but someone said that. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I think they must be aware of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'll just say briefly, and maybe this can launch us into this kind of discussion, this kind of topic. I was actually surprised. I thought we would be just erased from the history of what this is, because Wikipedia, when we're talking about Wikipedia, we know the slant that Wikipedia has. But when you look on the last decade now, and everything that's written about the last decade is pretty extensive, the Wikipedia entry, it's everything from trends in food to fashion to sports, everything, the decade in review. Nationalism is mentioned, even the alt-right is mentioned, and not alongside too many others. So even on Wikipedia, it is now acknowledged as a current in the last decade that affected culture, politics, discourse. So it's there.
Oh yeah, it's definitely there. The question is whether we are actually there, or whether they're using the term alt-right as just a catch-all for everything evil, which I think is often in their terms, which often what they do. I mean, Jason, would you like to speak on that?
Well, yeah, certainly they're going to, and we talk about this quite a little bit. I mean, this is their anti-white narrative, and they're going to take everything and they're going to mold it to fit their anti-white narrative, where it undermines the narrative. They'll bury it underfoot, or they'll restrict it to the area where it occurred, so that the people who know about it won't lose faith in the media, or any more faith, as though there's very much faith left in the media. But certainly, yeah, they will right across the heavens. Anything that they can use to bolster and support the anti-white narrative. So this is a big shift in thinking that we are making here, really just in the sort of chrysalis that I think that a great portion of the white positive sphere is really going to be breaking out of right here in 2020 and this continuing decade, is this shift in thought that we talk about all the time in the work that I'm doing, and that is that what's going on in the real world, what the vagues know, the normies, whatever you want to call them, in the world around us, what they know is life. What they know is the life that they're living is really just the anti-white narrative. And then the anti-whites at the universities and the media, et cetera, they then use events from the real world to either support their fictional narrative, or they bury it so that you won't find out that it disproves it. So this holds true for facts. It holds true for the publication bias in sophisticated journals, you know, all the way down to the teachers in elementary school who will exclude facts and information and prevent their children from hearing about these things if it doesn't comport with the anti-white narrative. So in the anti-white narrative, what's happening? In the anti-white narrative, the anti-white slur of racist and racism is always on the rise. In the anti-white narrative, anti-Semitism is always on the rise. So we need to not speak in terms, and that's what we talk about with the dialectics and lexicon of going free, not speak in the terms that the anti-whites speak, so as to take them out of this narrative. In that narrative, an anti-white or a vague who is villainy signaling to everyone around them, those people are the good guys. They are the protagonists in that story. And so they really feel themselves to be riding in on a white horse and slaying this white dragon that has to be slain again and again and again. So what we do is we turn this dialectic around. We turn this argument around. We turn this conversation around by refusing to speak in their verbiage. And that includes refusing to allow them to say things like racist, stopping them in their tracks and saying, you know, you're not going to use that anti-white slur around me. We can talk about the subject, but you're not going to use anti-white slurs. And to phrase things in such a way that the anti-white is forced to take the position of the bad guy. Now, they won't say outwardly, you'll know when it happens. You'll see it on their faces. When they realize that they have to convince you that you should be white guilted, that you should be victimized, you will see on them that realization that they are no longer emboldened by being able to be the hero in this story, but instead they are, in fact, the malefactor. They are the antagonist in a story that, folks, we are writing. We hold the pen in this story. The only way we are going to save ourselves is to write our own narrative where we are the heroes, we are the good guys, we are the ones who have the glorious past and a glorious destiny that we're going to recapture. If we stay on their pages in the anti-white narrative, there isn't a good conclusion for us. It is sanguinary because you cannot make amends for a grievance you never committed. And that's what happens. That's where this started for me, and I'll pass it right back, is when I was in junior high school, and I said to my friends, this realization, this epiphany hit me sitting in the lunchroom. I can remember the day as though it's right now. I said to my friends sitting at the table, I said, look, this is just a story. The white children that were at this junior high school, 11 to 13 years of age, two grade years, those children were the bad guys in that story. They were the inheritors of this awful evil from the past that they had to wrap, this shroud they had to wear for as penance and making amends, ever kissing the feet of the non-whites around them. Today, we are the bad guys at this junior high school because we are the white students. In the future, the white kids who will be here then, they will be the bad guys at this school. There's no making amends for a grievance that you never committed. It's a position in a story that we are being subjected to, and then we allow them to force us into that role. So this is why I say, and as I say, I'll pass it back, this is why I say, never don the implements, the vocabulary, the emblems, etc., that they have given, the anti-whites have given to the antagonists in their story. So that this particular verbiage that they give you to use, it's like, as I phrased it, it's like you decide you want to support white well-being. And then what do most people do? They look around in the world and they say, well, what does an advocate for white well-being or white positivity look like? Well, in the anti-white narrative, they have these symbols, they talk with this vernacular, they support this kind of government, this kind of economy. It's like they go to anti-white theater and they go into the dressing room and they say, well, what kind of clothes do I have to wear if I'm going to oppose anti-whiteism? What kind of vocabulary do I have to use if I'm going to oppose anti-whiteism? You don't do that, ladies and gentlemen, because not because you're going to appease the anti-whites or somehow placate them. It's not about them. You'll never placate them. If you get in the way of anti-whiteism, they're going to steamroll you. They're going to attack you. This is all about our brothers and sisters out there, the vagues, who they're living their life by the anti-white narrative. So if you don the vocabulary, the clothing, the symbols of the antagonist in that story, they will see you as the bad guy, and all the attendant stories, the movies, the books they've read where these people are punishing the innocent non-white child and all of this, they will think that they will associate that with you. They will think that that's what you represent. We decide what it looks like to look like an advocate for white well-being. We decide what vocabulary we use. Never give in to the anti-whites.
One thing I would ask is, if we're not going to use the vocabulary that they use, how can we combat that vocabulary? Is there not a danger that we hand them a victory? I mean, I understand what you mean about not living up to silly negative stereotypes of white advocacy. Of course, I agree with that. But you understand my question. So what would you say to that?
Absolutely. Well, essentially, what they want to do is, just to circle back a bit, they want to continue that narrative, the anti-white narrative, of them being the hero and you being the villain. So when they come in, they want to use the vocabulary that's used for the villain. They want to use things like hater, bigot, chauvinist, racist, anti-Semite, these sorts of things. You immediately call that down as an anti-white slur. So no, do not use anti-white slurs with me. If we can have a discussion about this, and this is what's important, I guess, also, we have to make a distinction. And this actually speaks a little bit to this, I think, the conversation that Anakin Skywalker was talking about with the shaming. And that is that you don't want to waste your time with someone who is not potentially going to start going free, who's not potentially going to come over to the service of white well-being, to the white positive sphere. If you come up against a person who is vehemently anti-white, break off your conversation with them, say, thank you, have a nice day, thank you for letting me know how much you hate Western kind, how much harm you want to inflict, and move on to someone who can potentially hear what you have to say. So that means you have an audience that is a potential convert to their own salvation, their own redemption. And when you're talking with such a person and they want to bring them, in fact, we just had I had a woman reach out to me. She went to she's going free, learning the dialectics and vocabulary. She went to a family party. She had a conversation with an uncle, and he tried to use some anti-white vocabulary with her, some of these anti-Semite or whatever it might be. She stopped him from saying, those are anti-white slurs. I'd like to talk about this with you, but we're not going to use these anti-white slurs. You know, don't slander me with these anti-white slurs. Immediately refielding that conversation and then being able to talk about these subjects. So the issue is that the anti-white elites, they have sophisticated, brilliant people who, and make no mistake, when it comes to warfare, the most powerful element of warfare is not the bombs that drop, but it's the psychological warfare. It's these manipulative tools. So they want to engage you. They want to get you roped into these conversations about why don't you want to bring in the third world into your country? What are you, some sort of hater? You want to turn the conversation into, why do you want to destroy Western civilization? Why do you want white people to have a hard time of getting jobs, protecting their children? You refuel the conversation that way, and then they are not able to take you into this path of defend yourself that you're not a racist, defend yourself that you're not all of these anti-white slurs. You want them backpedaling, defending themselves because they're trying to say, oh, I'm not anti-white. Really, let me tell you all the reasons why. When you get them to that point, you are in a good place. If they don't want to go there, then you're like a salesperson. What is it? We said this before. What is the most important thing as a salesperson that you can potentially know about a prospect? And that is whether or not that prospect is a potential customer. If you know that prospect will never buy what you're selling, then that is the best information you can have, because you can move on. We have hundreds of millions of our brothers and sisters out there with absolutely normal sensibilities like ours that are willing to listen. And every day they are more willing to listen. So in short, to answer your question, it is about refielding and not going into their dialectics, not going into their conversations, because you cannot win there. Those dialectics are specifically crafted for you to lose. That's why the conservatives, the nationalists, etc., they never win these conversations. They go away. Sometimes they try to pat each other on the back, trying to say, oh, you did a great job. You actually showed them there. But they, deep down, they feel like they lost, and they know it. And so many of the folks who have come to Serve White Wellbeing, they were there. And now they come back and they say, wow, I'm using these dialectics and this vocabulary, and I'm actually winning these conversations for the first time in my life. So that is what I would say. You strip them of the vocabulary, snatch victory out of the jaws of defeat, and you take it from them, and that's how you win the day.
All right. I remember asking you a set of techniques like this when you were on in 2017, because I had only just discovered your channel a month or so earlier. And it was at that time you were talking about techniques for how to win debates and arguments against people. So I would recommend that, by the way, for anyone who's curious. You should have a look at No White Girl's channel. Jared, would you have anything to say about this yourself, about how to approach people? I think one thing that Jason just said that I think is very important is try to gauge, is there any hope for this conversation or not? Is this a waste of my time and energy or not? Is there anything that you would add to this?
Well, Jason has worked this out, and it's been his life's work. I'm happy to sit here and have Jason speak to this, because this is his strength. And his book, Go Free, his Going Free streams, this is that's where you want to go if you want to learn this. He's just giving you a little taste. There it is, folks. The reframing thing, I would say in general, is kind of where we're at when you want to talk about the decade and the decade in review. I don't have anything to add specifically to what Jason just said in the moment, because I think he summed it up well. I think this decade has been pretty much, the cracks are showing from the post-war narrative, the post-war milieu. I have this kind of pet theory that not the fact that centuries are just from, you know, 1900 to 2000. That's definitely not mine. Everyone knows that a decade or a century isn't really cleanly, you know, from zero to zero. But the part of it that is mine is the frame where I would say the 20th century, you could argue, began around 1914 with the opening of World War I here in the States. A couple of years before that, we had the creation of the Federal Reserve. And that kind of kicked off a lot of the events and the narratives that would go on to form the arc of the 20th century, right? And there's a century is a huge thing to take into account, and there's a lot of different threads to it. But one obvious thing is we all had to deal in the 20th century with that rise of technology. We saw the wars became way more technological. And one offshoot of that was the fact that all of these cultures are now in touch with each other. You can get on a plane and go visit another part of the world. And now in our lifetime, the internet has made those things, has made the cross-cultural communication, learning about one another for better or worse, where we haven't been evolved to deal with that. It's just happened upon us. And there's been a narrative, of course. We know that there are things that happened in the 20th century, and I'm not even talking about debating whether or not these stories are true or false, but what is true, what is real, what is tangible and measurable is the way those stories, those narratives have been used. Those are having real effects.
If I may interrupt, I think one important thing to assert is that even if it's all true, we still don't deserve to go extinct, and we still don't deserve to be outnumbered in our own countries.
Correct. No matter what, I'm just saying we can sidestep for a moment getting into what happened, where and when. The effects of the narrative are real, and the effects of the narrative have psychologically decimated our people. And it's important. Tim Murdoch, I was on White Rabbit Radio recently, he reminded me it's very important to say, don't talk about it in the abstract. Don't talk about it as the white race, as if it's over here. Say my race in a conversation like this, our race, make it personal. These are our people. You know, we see these pictures of mummies in China and everywhere that had blonde hair, blue eyes. We travel the world. I know in recent history, as much as we know, Europe, of course, seems to be our place where we came from. But who knows? Who knows what the longer, more esoteric history is? Our people were everywhere. We've gone around. But the people with our traits, our genetic legacy, our culture, we've been around a long time. And it's no one else is coming to save us. It's up to us to save us. We're under attack. So what's gone on is the narrative of the 20th century, the cracks began to show in that facade in this decade. From our perspective, and again, a decade's not as big as a century, but it's a lot happens in a decade, especially in the technological world that we live in. There's a lot of different threads you could pull at. But for what we're interested in, why we're here, why the community here is with us listening to this now, is from our perspective, this decade that we're about to end is what showed the cracks in that story. So this was the turning point. And I guess if you had to pinpoint something, it would be that 2015, 2016 period where the invasion started in Europe. And of course, in 2016, you had Brexit and Trump. So those would be kind of the linchpin moments. 2016, it really hinges on that. That's when the dam begins to break. And what we're about to go into is now that the dam is broken, we're going to deal with the fallout of that. And who knows what's going to happen in the 2020s. The reason that I mentioned this on the heel, and we can get into that, the reason I mentioned this on the heels of what Jason's saying, I'm not trying to just shoehorn in this topic. It literally made me think of this as you were asking me, is because Jason was talking about it on a personal level. You could talk about this on a larger level too. What's going on right now is a reframing. That word reframing is a key to all of this. It's a nucleus to all of this. Whether it's in the grand narrative in society or in a conversation you're having, like Jason was speaking to, and he's dedicated so much of his life to being able to navigate those and have tools for those interpersonal conversations with the uncle, with the cousin, with the whoever, the shopkeeper. Whether it's that personal conversation or a look at the story of the trajectory of our civilizations, of our societies, what we have to do is get people used to being, is changing that frame and being the good guy in our own story. So the fallout from that is what we're about to get into. And I was asked, we were talking a little bit about this on our own stream last night. We kind of had just a fun hangout holiday special with some friends. And the way I put it is, look, I'm not really into future forecasting. I might have mentioned that to you before. I just think it's easy to sit here and say, oh, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. No one really knows what's going to happen.
And it is very difficult to predict.
There could be one flashpoint. No one can predict. But I would say, just speaking very generally with trends, and to kind of put like a pithy little ribbon on it, that I was reminded, as trite as it might sound, of that famous Dickens opening to A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. And I think that's going to be this next decade for us, because I think in the best sense, we're going to see our worldview vindicated, whether it's the crazy anti-white progressives or the conservatives who seem like they're not anti-white to maybe the normies, but we know they're still carrying out an anti-white agenda. Their explanation of reality, their addressing of what's going on is not working. It's not satisfying people. And I think we're going to see our worldview vindicated. And because of that, a lot more people are going to come our way. I think that the way that we handle ourselves, the character that we show, is going to be rewarded. One quick example is how Jason here handled the debate between Mark Collette and James Goddard, one of the Tommy guys. James Goddard and his people were saying it, they were amazed that on our home court and Jason's channel, how respectful Jason was as a moderator, how even-keeled he was, how even-keeled Mark was. As Jason was saying earlier, when people come to this who are more neutral or observers tipping a toe in, and they see, wait a second, these guys aren't like the Hollywood Nazis that we're told about. They have that cognitive dissonance. This is going to bring people over. It's going to bring people over who are maybe a few pegs away from us right now, like the James Goddards and maybe some people in the Tommy camp or people here in America who are more in the conservative movement, whatever the names are, doesn't matter. So those are the ways in which this next decade, I think, are going to be very good. I think there's a lot of opportunity for more community. I think more numbers are going to come our way. And I think we're going to see an explosion of arts and culture, because this is not just about political and analysis on YouTube. As much as we have some great minds who are very astute at that, making political analysis and kind of explaining the world and the political game through our frame, we need to live our lives. We need to make art, music, poetry, film. And that's an expensive medium, but you know, some people are trying to start that. We need to make things by us and for us. And we're going to see an explosion in that. The downside, of course, is that because that's going on, we're going to have the news tighten around us even more. And we're going to see a lot of attacks. We're going to see a lot of censorship, obviously, everything that we've gone through and much more. And the outside world is going to go absolutely wild. You know, the drag queen story hour and all that stuff's not going to change overnight. It's only going to get crazier. So we're about to see probably a decade of great contrast, but I would say for those out there, and then I'll hand it back over, just as I think it's a good point to end on this, and this is why Jason and I are so into community, is to strap on for that ride. You really have to get yourself right, and I'll get a little motivational here for a moment, but the first and last thing you have sovereignty over is yourself. So before you worry about, well, men should go first or women should go first, and there's all this problem with the sexes or all this confusion about races and everything that we talk about, all this confusion. The thing that you have most sovereignty over, what you're making decisions about every day, is yourself. You have to get your health right. You have to get your head right. You have to get with people who are positive and get you into an upward spiral. Anything that requires more energy to get less, even if it's playing video games too much, that could be a form of a soft addiction. I'm not saying if you play video games occasionally for strategic reasons and exercising your strategic mind, that's a bad thing. Not necessarily. But anything where you get into that downward spiral, you need to get into things that get into an upward spiral, positive energy, and you need to have people in your life that you can hang on to through this next decade, because it's going to be crazy and you're going to need people around you and you're going to need to take breaks. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Even me being involved in this, you know, I turn Twitter off sometimes. When I was visiting family over Christmas, over the last few days, I put my phone upstairs most of the time. It was away from me, physically away from me. You can take a break. The world will turn without you being on Twitter. And I don't want to call anyone out. I'm not even thinking of anyone particular in our community. But I was even a little bit disappointed that people in my general sphere, and I still follow largely positive people. I don't hate follow or anything. even the day after Christmas, are posting violence porn, bad news porn. It's like, guys, it's Christmas time. It's Yuletide. Like, can we have, like, can you post some more things about beauty and inspiration? For every bad news story you post, you should be posting 10 beautiful, inspiring things. We're not going to get that upward mobility unless it's you're focusing on things that are nourishing and life-giving.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think there is, or there has been, a tendency to obsess and marinate in the what's it called? There's a term for it, like decline porn sort of thing. And there are actually some real grifters and shills who just concentrate on that and do nothing else. So, I mean, it's not admirable, and I don't think it's overly, I don't think it's helpful. I think we have to move on from that. So it's absolutely crucial. This is something I said in my turmoil outer video, I think, that it's not enough for us to constantly be surprised at how bad everything is and that things are getting worse and you know, all that. Of course they are. It's you've, in a way, you've got to expect that and just accept it, but not enjoy the decline.
I know I just spoke a while. I just have a very quick thing to say. There's a book called The Modern Mind. I think the author's name is Peter Watson. I might be getting that wrong, but I know the last name is Watson. It's a kaleidoscopic view of the 20th century. And I've been reading it in bits here and there to get a better view of the century we just left. I have to get back to it. But he begins with an anecdote with someone who lived through a lot of the century, an older man, I think it was. And he was asked in an interview, what is the most remarkable thing about living through this century? And he had seen wars. I don't know if he had lived in Europe. He might have been right there coming to the, you know, his prime as a young man during World War II. He'd been around some stuff. I think he had to flee somewhere. The thing that this guy said was he lived through most of the 20th century. And he said, you know what was amazing about it? I saw so much change. I saw so much turmoil. It was right around me. It affected my family. But I still had a good life. We're still living our lives right now. Please remember that. I know there's crazy stuff going on, but there are people getting married. There are babies being born. There's art being created. We're still living our lives. Please keep that front and center of your mind. There are things going on in my life right now that are beautiful and I love, despite everything going on. And that's what allows me to get up here and keep doing this. Going back and forth between the things that buoy me up and then, you know, putting on the war gear and going into the craziness.
Yeah, indeed. No White Guilt, we do have something to say about how to cope with the volume of stuff that goes on.
Well, particularly the negative stuff, probably. There are a couple of things here when it comes to the all of the negativity going on. And so I'll say this briefly as well, because it's imminent. It's connected, intimately connected to the subject of the negativity. This coming decade, and I said it the other day when I think it was going free stream, that the 2020s is going to be a decade of stark dichotomies. So in other words, you have, I visualize this as two great storms on our horizon at the moment, and one of darkness, one of light. And as we tick right over into 2020, those first clouds are going to arrive over our heads. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that anti-whiteism is not going to be mitigated by the things that we're doing. This is an old view. This is an antiquated view that we are somehow pushing back against what the anti-whites are doing. And you hear the people ignorantly talk about anti-whites. So this is probably another thing that folks need to really adopt if they want to be successful in this coming decade, in their lives, with their families, with converting others around them. And that is, stop calling these people Democrats, stop calling them labor, stop calling them feminists, stop calling them by the names of their taking.
Communists,
Marxists, these are the names of their taking. Call them for what matters to us, and that is that they are anti-white. These are all just subsets of the superset. Once you call them anti-white, now you have really truly categorized them in a way that they have to be the bad guy in those conversations, in that tale. If you call them a communist, if you call them a little beautiful baby cherub, if that's what they want to be called, I mean, I guarantee you, the cuck conservatives out there, if the anti-whites said, we are now the cherubs, the idiots would be calling them cherubs. That's how dumb these people are. That's how deeply they've been infected, misled, I should say, by cuck conservative leaders who are often compromised weaponized by powerful and wealthy anti-whites behind the scenes. So ultimately, though, when we're talking about the negativity that's coming forward and this what's happening in this coming decade, this decade of stark dichotomies, the anti-whites will be getting worse. What they're doing to our civilization, the infliction of harm on our people, on our civilizations, will get worse. But we are going to be getting stronger. We are going to be growing in numbers. We are going to be growing in talent. We are going to be growing in output. So there's going to be this simultaneous growth that is racing for a moment, an event horizon that is in the future that will change our context. Now, this is what's important. I'm coming full circle to back to that question. When we allow ourselves to become depressed, we are allowing ourselves to take on questions for which there are no answers. So it's in part looking at all the negativity that is taking place in the world around us, all the ruination, all the white erasure, the people that are white erasing themselves or white flighting themselves into drugs, white flighting themselves into gaming, white flighting themselves into endless porn, white flighting themselves into all of these other things. And to escape this, the white erasure, to escape their white noir. And then when they come to the white positive sphere, too many content creators are giving them this question. So it's this dual thing going on. The question is, how do we take back civilization? How do we reclaim all that has been stolen from us? How do we make tomorrow and the next year not look as bad as it has been, not look as bad as it's projected to be? When you ask yourselves these questions, you can do nothing but become depressed. The reason why, ladies and gentlemen, is because there are no answers to those questions. You don't have the power to make those things happen. What we do have the power to do today is to move this context to a new context, a context in which there will be opportunities. They will present themselves to us. Things will get worse for the anti-whites. Things will get better for us. When you contemplate things from a position that simply are not possible, irrespective of how intelligent you are, even irrespective of how much money you have, you can do nothing but become depressed. How are you going to, if you're a cancer patient, how are you going to not have cancer? And you are going to ask yourself, how can I not have cancer anymore? Rather than seeking those who know how to treat you for the cancers, you're going to sink into the blackest of depressions. That's what happens. That's why we see so many people cycle in like comets into the white positive sphere, and they leave again. They come in exhilarated. They're aggravated. They're upset about what's being done. They want to participate. And then content producers, thought leaders, etc., give them the question, how do we take back civilization? How do we right all the wrongs? How do we regain our destiny? And they have no answers for that. Here's what you can have an answer for. Number one, look at these things. I'm not going to say what some people say, which is never to indulge. And that's not being said. I'm not saying that either of you two or anybody here is saying this. Never to look at what's awful in the world, because this is what for me and what is for so many, the true fire, the true motivation. The greatest of motivators is to wed the anger from what's being done to those we love with our love for our people. You wed those, and that is a flame that never dies. Never dies in me. It'll never die in you. So you want to see these things. You want to be upset with them. You don't want to wallow in them. You don't want to just sit in the mire of all that is bad. But you use these things to motivate you, and then here's what you do. You do not contemplate how we take back the world, how we reclaim our destiny so that we can put an end to all of these egregious things going on in our civilization, and return the refulgence to Western civilization and Western kind. You don't contemplate these things. You contemplate, how are you going to get your brother, mother, sister, coworker, cousin, a stranger on the subway, whatever, to go free with you? That's all you have to do. This is a curative contagion. In earlier years, 2 decades ago, 3 decades ago, it was very difficult to persuade our brothers and sisters of what is becoming increasingly easy to persuade them of. And that is, anti-whiteism is deleterious for Western civilization. It's deleterious for your life. When Western kind is harmed, you are harmed. Your loved ones are harmed. So therefore, your well-being, your safety, your health and happiness is only achievable by the group's health and happiness and well-being. That is all you have to do. And that is something that is constructive. That is something that every single day you can say to yourself, how am I going to change the mind of someone? How am I going to introduce Going Free or to introduce these new lexicon and dialectic to someone I know, someone I don't know? You get on a message board. You could write to newspapers. You can pin up leaflets. We had leaflets this year dropped in several states. Of thousands of them that said no white guilt. We have leaflets available if you want them free. We had John, a participant going free, paid for 10,000 leaflets to be made that he designed. He's providing them all on his dollar to anybody who wants to distribute these. And folks, when they distributed these leaflets and they showed them on the news, how often have you heard a sheriff that came to this scenario and was interviewed and actually said, well, you know what? This is actually because they say no white guilt. This guy was really in a situation where he had to say, look, there's nothing legal about this and we don't see anything wrong with this. So if any laws are ever broken, we'll look into it. You know what he was saying. There's nothing wrong. What are you trying to say, that I should feel guilt because I'm a white man? That is what this sort of verbiage and dialectics can do for you. You can go out and spread this message to someone. Very easy to make an impact. And that is how you will feel better on a daily basis about yourself and what's going on in the world.
Yeah. And Janet, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
There's nothing I'd like to add to that at this time.
Right. Okay. So should we talk about the decade that has passed? I know that we've sort of touched on it here and there, but Jared, what would you say are the main threads from this, the 2010s? A lot of people have been saying the rise of social media, the rise of alternative political spheres. What would you say about that?
Well, I touched on it when I was speaking a few moments ago, so I'd like to get Jason's thoughts. I'll just briefly say, again, to reiterate, I think time will tell, but we could argue that the 21st century really began not in the year 2000, but pretty much 2015, 2016. So we lived through this eclipse, this transition period, and now we're really going to see what the 21st century, the opening of the 21st century is about, because this is the decade where, again, that post-war milieu, the narratives that have gone on since the end of World War II and the assumptions that have been, everyone's been marinating in, that facade began to crack. I think overall, big picture for me, that is the story of this decade. And then, there's interesting things to talk about as side conversations that are corollaries or tributaries to that, about selfishness and social media, the decade of the selfie. We're on the verge of 5G becoming a bigger thing, or AI becoming a bigger thing, or gene editing becoming a bigger thing. And, those are interesting side conversations, but again, given what we do and what we talk about, and we have those conversations on our shows, of course. Again, for anyone not familiar with us, we're expanding and we want to touch on things that are tangential to this, because as I said when I spoke at length earlier, we're all still living our lives. So as much as Jason and I are motivated by a tremendous love of the people we come from, the people we are, that's not the only note that we hit. We're interested in a lot of things. We're interested in life. And I think, speaking of being interested in life, may I just say, on the note of the positivity, it's often said that the people who win love life more. You have to love life. So that's another reason why I would say you have to do whatever you can to get out of those downward spirals.
You go on.
I just want to say we've had amazing testimonials. People who have come back from alcoholism, opiate addiction, even contemplating suicide have written it. I mean, we've had moments on our show more than once where Jason and I had tears in our eyes hearing about testimonials from people out there.
I think it is important to, as you say, to love life, because apart from anything else, it really eats into you if you don't have that attitude. It's an easy attitude to lose as well. The way the world is, and of course, no one's life is perfect. There are always things wrong. So I think it is important to try. And if you are in a bad patch, I think it's important to surround yourself with people who are not. This is really about mental health. But I think just in the context of our movement, I think it is important to try to stave off the negativity that can come with knowing how wrong the world is.
And I don't want to take away anything from people who genuinely may be lashing out because they don't have the maturity or the development yet, the balance from which to approach some of these things. But we do have to remember, when you see some of this negativity in the comments or various forms of social media, there are a lot of saboteurs out there. A lot of those people trying to get you in arguments and trying to put rifts between the different subsets, the different ethnicities of the white peoples, or between our men and our women in this battle of the sexes stuff. A lot of those people, guys, are trolls. A lot of those people are paid to do this. So please remember that. You can't think that there's this majority of people out there. A lot of them are saboteurs. But Jason, I did want to, as I said, get your thoughts on the decade, because I've spoken a couple times now on that subject.
Well, the previous decade, this past decade closing out, thank God, because this 2020 is going to, the 2020s are really going to be what decides whether we capture our destiny, recapture our destiny or not. And so I am exhilarated, and I think we should all be. We have so many talented folks who are here, people like the ace, Millennial Woes, who is the ghost of Christmas Woes occasionally, and the disembodied, omnipresent voice for our wayward folks. But, I mean, Dutton, Mark Collette, Dr. Patrick Slattery, so the great Jared George, so many just magnificently talented folks out there. Don't let him, he's a humble guy, both of these gentlemen are. Support them both, subscribe to them both, financially support them, write them and tell them how much you appreciate what they're doing. It's being on the front line is a difficult thing, but we have never been in more of a powerful position to reclaim our destiny than we are right now. And it is these symbolic victories that we are having day after day after day that are meaningful. It's not the victory that you hear a lot of these saboteurs, what they want. Jared just mentioned, and we've seen a lot of them over the past decade, to talk about the past decade, and we will continue to see them. Very often, I know I saw Annika in the chat, live chat here, and Woes, you and her talked about, I guess it was maybe a previous visit or whatever where she was on, where there was a lot of people saying some negative things. And please remember what Jared just said is absolutely the truth, is the gospel. Many of these people who come into these live chats and they say things to start fights and they say things to insult, they're not actually with us. They have come in to build up reputations. They say positive things to build up reputations so that they are believed by the audience to be a decent person, someone who agrees, and then they throw the poison into the mix. It is no different than the way the anti-whites have always operated. They'll seed a crowd, if it's a live crowd, with a naysayer here and a naysayer over there. And then at the right appointed times, the naysayer here will stand up and shout nay, and the naysayer there, and the naysayer there. And before you know it, the crowd, even though there's maybe less than 1% of the entirety of the crowd, is seated with these losers, these provocateurs, meant to destroy, the entirety of the crowd begins to wonder that, wait, maybe should I be thinking the opposite? Maybe the whole crowd is against me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are characters, and I don't think they're even saboteurs. I think a lot of them are sadly politically on our side, but they're just socially maladjusted.
Well, certainly.
It happens too, yeah.
Yeah, there absolutely are people, and this is something that we faced more so in previous years, particularly when the internet and this sort of spread promulgation of white well-being on the internet was very new, and we really incipient. We were in meetings, face-to-face meetings, and we had two kinds of folks, just like we do now. You had people who came in who were cranks. They were just referred to as a crank. And why will cranks show up? Because cranks don't fit in anywhere in society. And so they're just looking for anybody that society, and this is the anti-white society is what we're talking about now, because that is the morality that we have to wear like an Iron Maiden everywhere we go. So the cranks are looking for someone who will listen to their crotchets. And so they show up. And they might play normal at first, but then you realize, okay, this person is an idiot, a crank. And so the big debate back in the day was, do you allow them to stay and allow them, you know, to speak because we want numbers, and so we look like there are more of us, and then more will come. Or do you kick them out because they'll run off decent people? And of course, the sound advice was to get rid of the cranks. And so we're always going to have to be shedding these people, you know.
I ban them from my channel, and I don't like doing it, but it's the only way to maintain a healthy community.
And I'm sure Mark Collette spoke to you at length about Patriotic Alternative with that.
Yes, indeed. He gave a speech where he talked about that fringe politics does unfortunately attract fringe people, and a lot of them are maladjusted and the antisocial, you know, and they think that they just don't have any notion of diplomacy or getting along. They think that arguing all the time is the way to get your point. They have absolutely no idea about how to win friends and influence people, basically.
Well, this is so you have the crank problem, and then we had the undercover, either narc, which is, you know, some loser that has been pressed into service by law enforcement of various stripes, or actual undercover law enforcement agents who would show up. And usually what they would do, they would out themselves by suggesting some sort of criminality. So we would, whoever was sharing crotchets, we invited them to the door and to never return. Whoever showed up and recommended some sort of illegality, we gave them one opportunity. We said, never say anything like that again. It's not even funny because people have gone to jail because of it. And if they were police officers of various stripes, they would never come back because they would realize, well, we're not going to be able to goad any of these people. Now, when you have, now think about this, this is in person. When you have live chats, I mean, you could have one person with five accounts sitting in some Middle Eastern basement and here to do nothing more than to cause issues, to cause infighting. And they could be employed by federal governments, state governments, law enforcement of various departments. They could be privately funded, NGO funded, who knows? But the reality is we don't have to figure out why they're doing it or what this person's. Is this person actually a crank or a cop or working for a well-known sort of organization, NGO or whatever? All that matters for us is that we just get rid of them, just shed them like the bad skin, the dead skin that has to be shed, and then keep marching forward. Now, the past decade, what's really happened over the past decade is from the very beginning to the end has been an increasing, an exponentially increasing polarization that is really motivationally naked polarization when it comes to anti-whiteism. And that, my friends, is the most wonderful thing that could possibly have happened. The anti-whites up until this past decade could still use the pretexts that they care about everybody. They care about love. They care about this little baby's treatment. They care about the tears on that brown face or the bed sores on that black body. They can't hide that anymore. And their power is such that they don't even want to hide it anymore. So rarely now do they try to conceal it in these sorts of things. It's usually very young anti-white girls that will try to still hide behind these ridiculous pretexts. They haven't gotten the memo yet that these don't work anymore, that they're too transparent. But increasingly, you have people like Cortez and all of these people who are saying, you know, white America is over and all of these sorts of things. We're going to hear more of that. And that is magnificent. I want them saying that from the pulpit. I want them saying that on every TV channel, and they will. I went in my own state, Virginia, here, we're transformed by non-white, anti-white immigration into this state to a Democrat, anti-white state. And until we recapture our destiny, everything is now anti-white in the government, and they immediately are talking about things like gun confiscation, banning all forms of self-defense training, even karate for your little boy and your little girl that sends them to the daycare run by the wonderful Asian people who teach them how to say kia and all of this sort of business, that they even want to ban that. And so that's great, because all of these folks in Virginia, and this is the, and I'll pass it right back, the past decade has really been a, you know, it's been like the, what are these people called? The flashers from, you know, from previous history. They would flash with the trench coat and then cover themselves up and waddle off. Well, now the anti-whites have just thrown the raincoat off. They're just naked before all of us, and their hatred of our people and their hatred of Western civilization. And that means that all of our normal people, all of our white brothers and sisters out there, the Vagues, who have normal sensibilities, who are projecting themselves into our victimizers and thinking for our victimizers, no one would tell a lie that big. They must be motivated by love, as I would be motivated by love. There must be some truth to what they're saying, because the whole thing couldn't be a lie. Those people, unfortunately, because they're doing that grand projection, maybe it's based in our DNA, and that's how we have survived. We always had to see the mishaps that befell our brothers and sisters in the very cold winters of Europe. We always had to see them as believable, so we would take them in and we could perpetuate our people when there were genuine mishaps. They can now see these once flashing anti-whites out there with their trench coats. They can now see them naked. In fact, they march in the streets with giant insertable objects, and they're proud of this anti-whiteism that they have now. And these little housewives, these guys who maybe, you know, they're lacking a little testosterone, they're lacking a little manliness, they want to make an excuse for these folks all the time. They can't deny it. And when you show up and you talk about going free, you use these dialectics, they won't be able to deny it with you anymore. It's too much in their face. So this previous decade has been a decade of motivationally naked, exponentially increasing polarization. It is a glorious thing. And the 2020s are going to be a decade where our historians, once we recapture our destiny in that future, as nebulous as it is now, it is as sure as that Western sunrise, they will look back and they will say 2020 was the year it began.
I would say that the decade, if you want to put a headline on the past decade, we're wrapping up, is that this is the decade the mask fell. I was thinking the same thing. So, Jason, I'm glad that you said all that, because it perfectly sums up that notion. That's the decade that the mask fell.
Yeah, I think that's been a thing in several millennials, that the notion that after this decade, you cannot go back, and things that were previously implicit are now explicit. That basically the anti-white narrative is completely out in the open and obvious and undeniable, and they're even proud of it. So that makes it all a bit simpler at this point. You know, everyone talks about the Christmas adverts, the Christmas commercials every year. It's blatant. I mean, even to normies, they cannot deny what is happening there. So I think definitely the mask, not so much the mask fell, it was just cast away.
They threw it off. Yeah. But essentially what that does for us is we just have to be there to be the more attractive, shining option for people. As much as we do this work, many people have said before me that really life is red pilling people more than any of us are. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't do your part, like Jason was saying earlier, about confronting people in your life and in whatever way works best with them to start undoing all that anti-white programming, of course. But just in terms of the overall populace, we see that these instances, like you just mentioned the Christmas adverts, normal people who don't watch what we do are seeing this. I think we all notice this in our lives. People that don't pay attention to politics or culture at large, it's undeniable. And so what we have to do is be a magnet. That's not to say that we don't actively do things as well, but everything that we've been talking about tonight, that we keep circling back to about being positive, and for anyone that isn't used to hearing that, and it sounds weird and Pollyanna-ish, no, it's, think about it in terms of magnetism. You're attracting people. And that's why I talked about it being cultural as well. It's not just analyzing politics. It's everything about life, creating new art with our intentions. Doesn't mean that every song has to have a chorus where the chorus goes, "We're white and we're proud." You know, sometimes it's a fine line between art and propaganda. Sometimes just knowing the artist is from our milieu and they write a song about life. They write a love song. 90% of songs are love songs, but it's imbued with something of our spirit. And you know, the artist is from our ranks. That takes on a whole other kind of context. I know, again, Jeff Winston in White People's Quarterly magazine, that now the second one is out, and Jason and I helped kind of get that promoted a little bit and have had pieces in those magazines. He's a big piece in this last issue, the fall winter issue that just came out, about there's no such thing as art without context. So when you say something's good, something's bad, well, there's a context to that. There's a milieu. Everyone's thinking that all the popular arts is just what life is. The assumptions that they see in movies, the assumptions they see through music, it's like water to a fish. We're swimming around in it. This is what we mean, again, to circle back to where we were talking about earlier, about changing the context. Now, to be positive and attract people like a magnet, you have to have a full, robust culture. And that's why it's ridiculous to say that so-and-so can't be involved. Women can't be involved. This isn't, I'm not a political leader, guys. I'm not running for office. This isn't really politics. You know, this is life. This is culture. So we need our women being examples so that younger women can look at, even if it's an Instagram thing, you gotta be where you are. You have to use the tools of the day. Even if it's these traditional women sharing their recipes, sharing their lifestyle tips, sharing their homeschooling on Instagram, practical tips, but also in a more general sense, an example, something to shoot for. So that 14-year-old girl sees that example of motherhood, that example of homeschooling, and not the ridiculous examples that we're being given from the anti-white culture around us. We have to have our own thing going on. So what Jason was saying, Jason, I don't know if this is exactly how you would put it, but when you were talking about the two storms, what I saw was it's not like we're going in and trying to say, well, we're going to clean out Hollywood from the inside out and change things. We're going to take over politics. No, that's over here. We're going to start our own thing. I'm thrown off by StreamYard being in this setup here. But we're going to start our own thing, and you can go meet us over here. So we're not taking over this thing or destroying it. We're starting our own fire over here, and you all are going to be more attracted to it, and more things are going to start to revolve around that nucleus or that star.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons I'm not so worried about losing YouTube. I mean, obviously, it'll be a bummer, but I think that if we set up a new community on BitChute, I'm guessing it's going to be BitChute, but whichever website becomes the de facto place for political, cultural, ethical discussion, I think it will start, it will become a beacon. You know, whichever video website becomes the place for that kind of content, I think it will become a sort of cultural, what's the word, a lodestar? Is that the right word I'm looking for? I'm not sure. A beacon for people to be attracted to. And, you know, it might even be advantageous that it's separate from, you know, all the tripe on YouTube. Jared, would you like to take that?
I've thought about that as well. I mean, we do want to have some interaction with the more general populace because, you know, sometimes we think of them as this faceless blob. Like they're all, it's us or normies. But the fact of the matter is, if we really sit down and think about it, like anything, there are gradients to it. So there are people, we know there are people who hate us. And we're never going to convince. They don't want us to exist. They're your enemy, plain and simple. But then there are gradients of people. And this is not like I've done some great bit of research. It's more just my observations and where things seem to be going. I've talked about this on streams with Jason, and other people seem to feel the same thing. Hopefully it's not just wishful thinking. And that is that there are a lot of people who are just outside the doorstep right now of what we're doing. And you see that you could even look at things like what just happened in the UK. Even though Boris Johnson and the Tories may not be our guys, the will of the people, the instincts of the people are still ticking in the right direction. And a lot of those, I think, are ripe for coming more fully into what we're talking about because of the whole confluence of factors that we've been discussing tonight, the things we're actively doing, but also clown world proceeding as it is and doing our work for us. So all of those things meeting together means we have a lot of people outside right on the doorstep. So we do need to be smart about still having a way to interface with those people. And I say, use everything you can. My first YouTube channel, some of you may know, was kicked off in the Vox Adpocalypse in June. No strikes, no warnings, just gone on June 5th. And that was just one node of what I do. You know, Jason and I started the afterparty.tv a couple of months ago, and increasingly our media activities are going to center around that because we want to train people not to think of YouTube, not to even think of BitChute, to be frank, although I love what BitChute's doing and I love that they're vehemently against censorship. But we want people to tap in the afterparty.tv because we worked with Entropy, where you can watch a stream right on our Watch Live Now page. We have the catalog of everything we've ever done going up. As I mentioned earlier, we have community videos. So it's not just about Jason and I. It's about people out there who are being proactive. We have an amazingly proactive community. So I do recommend people have their own websites as well. We have a mailing list there. You have to be smart about that. But I got right back on YouTube. I wasn't, oh, well, they hurt me, so they're my enemy, and I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of being on. Well, yeah, there's some truth to the fact that they are my enemy, but as that scaffolding is falling, I'm going to climb up. Even if it's falling, I'm going to climb up, and I'm going to jump onto the other thing. I'm still going to use their tool as much as I can. So if it helps me to be on YouTube a little bit, I will be. I'll be everywhere I can be. It's a multi-front kind of approach.
But and would you have anything to say about... Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Would you have anything to say about the utility of Telegram in this regard?
Telegram seems promising. I think Jason has been using it as a channel. I don't have it as a channel yet, but obviously we work very closely together and most of the streams we do are together. He has his Going Free, which he does himself. But other than that, kind of by way of Jason's channel, my stream activity is... blast it out to our people in our community. So far, what I know about it seems promising, but Jason, maybe you can speak more to it.
Yeah, I think it's promising as well. There are a number of, I was looking at this today, trying to figure out all of the different places that I have been censored from the times, the number of times that they have censored me and then I creep back in the back door. It's kind of like getting back into that movie theater where you don't want to have to pay for that anti-white film and you slide in that side door or whatever it is. But creep back in on those. I think Telegram, at least at the moment, is looking really promising. I think Woz, you're pretty high on that platform, aren't you?
Not as high as I'd like to be. I mean, you know, I had 22,000 on Twitter. I've only got 1,500 on Telegram. So it would be, and it, you know, it's so useful. It's annoying because it's so useful. It's a perfect way to keep in touch with people, to keep up to date with news. And so I wish more people would get on there. It's a great way to communicate with people as well, one-to-one messaging. So I wish more people would get on there, and I wish more people would follow my channel. So the link has just been posted. So it would be very good because then you won't miss any of these streams. Because each one is posted there. So, you know, you don't have to rely on YouTube anymore. Obviously, it's also posted on my PA's Twitter account, but a lot of people aren't on there either. So,
And I have to say, too, I don't want to speak out of turn or say things too early, but I'm in touch a little bit with some people. You know, we have very talented, smart people on our side as well, and some of them work in tech and are working on things to aggregate what all the content producers are doing and ways to quickly find them if they get kicked off of one. There are elements within our own thing that are trying to make our own homegrown products as well. And that is something very exciting we'll hopefully see in the next couple of years and the early part of this next decade as well.
Yes, definitely. I think alt tech and people who are in our movement are learning tech and are in that sector already. So I think there is going to be a lot of pushback from in that direction. So yeah, something to look forward to. All right, well, quickly rattle through some the super chats and then wrap up because I've got my next guest to you in 20 minutes. Okay, someone says, Lenka says, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, gentlemen and ladies. Onwards and upwards, my people. Thank you very much. There wasn't a question. I saw a skit with Jared and Philosophicat on NWG's channel the other day, and it was epic. Did Jared ever get his books? And can we get more of this, please?
He's referring to, I've done three skits with Philosophicat, and thank you for bringing that up. And like anything, they're on my site, thegreatorder.com, and any media content is also that Jason or I do separately or together is on theafterparty.tv. So if anyone's listening in the future and you're curious about if a certain guest has been on our show or what kind of videos we've done, please do go check those out. But yeah, just briefly, I was talking about culture creation before. I don't have movie sets and big budgets and locations, and we're all in different places. And I thought, as you know, Woz, sometimes the limits are the greatest thing for a creative mind. I thought, what's a way to get a little point across in a really simple way? So I started writing these Skype skits as if you're a fly on the wall watching a Skype conversation. So I've done three so far. One is where I'm kind of like a hipster consultant in LA, and Kat is an up-and-coming movie star, and you kind of see an anti-white agenda there. One is where she has she's recommending pills. It's like a teledoc situation. I call up just for indigestion, and then it becomes a ridiculous thing. And the one the super chatter is referring to is she is an Amazon, well, I don't say what it is, but an Amazon type company agent. And I call up, I'm like, why am I not getting these books I ordered and a gun rifle case? And she's like, well, you're on this watch list. And it's able to kind of poke fun at the regime, again, put things in our context, have fun with it. You know, hopefully, I would hope some people laugh. Some people seem to have liked them. I know as a creative person, you know this too, Woz. Not everyone's going to like everything, but I got positive feedback from it. And yeah, I guess my character did get his books after all, because he tells her to screw off at the end, and I guess he goes and finds his own thing. But yeah, you have to find a way to do it through humor. And I say a lot of things in those skits in kind of sideways manners. I think that avoids censorship. I don't go for low-hanging fruit. These are not skits about making fun of stereotypes from non-white groups. I have no interest in that. I want something for us we can laugh at and takes down the moral legitimacy of the regime. We can do, if you're intelligent and clever about it, you can do tons of that without resorting to low-hanging fruit about stereotypes or all kinds of things like that that we see on Twitter already.
Yes, for sure, for sure. It is a difficult thing to know how to go about it, because you don't want to be too crass and obvious, but you also want to get a point across with comedy.
Sure.
So, okay, Jason, just got your Born Guilty book. Will I know how to approach the upside down text when I arrive at that chapter?
Yes, you will. Here's the
Will. I can tell you as a reader.
Well, Jared, please. It's very easy. It is a unique device, and it's experimental literature. There are a lot of things in there that you're not going to have seen before in Born Guilty, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is at the special reduced price, almost 50% off at Amazon through the end of the year. And it's really easy. Just when you reach the point of the unique device, reflect on where you are in the story, and then follow the English alphabet, and you'll have no problem figuring it out.
It's very satisfying. Very satisfying, I might say.
All right. Okay. And someone says, yes, you will. It's actually one of the most fun and entertaining parts of the book. I'm certain you'll easily understand and enjoy it once you get there. Okay, thank you. Any thoughts on the 2020 US election? We know Trump will be the Republican nominee, but who do you guys predict will be his progressive challenger? Oh.
Jared, any thoughts?
I don't really do predictions. I don't want to dishonor the question, but I also have to honor who I am. It's not ask Sticks, Hex, and Hammer. It's not really what I do, you know.
They have Trump, I think, brilliantly. We'll know many in years in the future, but he tied the Democrats' hands to using Biden it could very well have been a vectoring move. And now they have to use him to continue the legitimacy of their investigation, because if they drop him, then Trump wasn't speaking about his competitor. So it would be Biden and probably someone non-white.
Right. Okay. All right. The final question. Hello, Tap. Hello, Woz. Your thoughts on people in the movement who constantly go on about civil war? And do you think civil war is inevitable? I think I should answer this one. I think in the long run, yes, I think civil war is inevitable. But I think that people who go on about it and who can talk about nothing else are perhaps not the most well-balanced people. Now, that's not to say that I don't think it should be prepared for. I think, if you can, you should be preparing for it. But to constantly go on about it, it's very much Fed posty, I think, in this climate at this time. I think it's kind of dodgy when people are, when you meet someone who's constantly... I mean, I met someone at a conference who asked me four times about this matter, and I'm pretty sure he was probably a plant trying to get me on tape saying something, actionable. So, all right, okay, well, let's leave it at that. So this was the after party, Jared, the Great Order, and Jason, No White Guilt, the after party, TAP, and thank you very much for appearing.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it was our pleasure. If you're interested, as I said, we're on the afterparty.tv. Please support our friend Woz here too. Merry Christmas and good Yule, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Okay, thank you very much to both of you for appearing. I hope you've enjoyed it. And okay, thanks to everyone for watching. I'll be back in about 15 minutes with Nightmares, Rogue Drones. All right, so I'll see you then. All right. In the meantime, thank you to TAP, the after party, for taking part in Millennial 2019.